thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
Well, if you think about it.
Here's John Williams.
And then I think about it. Mm-hmm. I think if we close 98 up today, we get to 22,000.
Lord have mercy.
I have got to buy some stock. One of these days, I'm going to get on the market, and then it's going to go right into the toilet. You watch. But in the meantime, hokey smokes. 22K. Remember when Donald Trump got elected and I thought, oh, no, we're doomed. The markets will fall apart. And they took that spiral and then all of a sudden they bounce back up that first day. And the next thing you know, it's been zoom, zoom, zoom ever since. That is that man's assurance policy. And so far, we're all the benefactors of it. Amen to that. 22,000. We're just this close. Somebody go out and buy some stocks. Push the price up. Let's get to 22. I don't know. It just seems pretty cool. We'll talk to Joel Stein, the Darty columnist from Time Magazine in the 2 o'clock hour. That's our presidential topic segment, I guess you'd say. Joel wrote a piece where he said he's sort of discouraged as a journalist. The president hasn't mocked or belittled him at all. And, you know, that really is the stock in trade. If the president's paying attention to you, if he's saying that you're fake news or awful or terrible or a loser or failing, well, then you know you're in the game. And he can't get the president to mock him or to criticize him or to belittle him. Joel Stein joins us at 2 o'clock. He's always a very funny conversation. So yesterday, Elif, are you ready with the audio? All of the conversation in the first hour of this show was about this.
Again in the air, down a left field line, a long reaching into the stands and couldn't get it. He's littered with a fan.
That's awfully close to fan interference right there. The umpire's all over it. The umpire right down there, Mike Everett's on the play. If Alou has to reach into the stands, it's fair game for the fans to catch the ball. If the fan reaches out over the field, then it can be ruled fan interference. That is very, very close.
Can you believe we're still talking about this? We did a little bit yesterday. We're just going to wrap it up today since Frank Murtha from Professional Sports Consultants was kind enough to join us. He is a longtime friend and attorney for Steve Bartman, the man who was described in that play. Hey, Frank, it's John Williams. Thanks for joining us again on WGN.
My pleasure, John. Good to talk to you again.
Incidentally, are you a longtime friend of Steve Bartman? Didn't the two of you go to school together? Weren't you both at Notre Dame?
No, I mean, he was a friend of one of my children. We share a common bond in that he is a graduate of Notre Dame, as am I, but it would be an insult to Steve if he was in the same class.
Oh, no, you're both young and debonair.
That's right. That's right. As Satchel Paige used to say, you know, age is just mind over matter. If you don't mind, it don't matter.
So he reached out to you after that and said, hey, can you give me a hand? And you've been his de facto spokesperson ever since, basically saying, no, he won't comment on this for 14 years now, right?
That's right. That's right. It's, as Yogi Berra used to say, is deja vu all over again.
Well, I have a question about him getting the World Series ring. In a day filled with news in the state, in the city, in the country, in the world, above the fold in the Chicago Tribune today, the big story, Bartman gets a ring. Who reached out to whom? How did this deal come to be?
We were really approached by the Tribune organization as far back as the time when they won the series. You know, there was an invitation extended if Steve wanted to be part of the parade. And as I think I said publicly at the time, in no way did he want to do that to be a distraction to the players and the great accomplishments that they had achieved and the organization. So we demurred, you know, to that. And then, you know, there's been an open dialogue. I mean, even going back to prior ownership and John McDonough, you know, the organization has always said that Steve is welcome there, but from security standpoints and other issues, that was just a non-starter.
Well, but you said Tribune a moment ago. You meant the Ricketts. The Ricketts reached out to him. Tribune doesn't own the Cubs anymore.
No, the Ricketts reached out now, but I'm saying going back to
even
the
then,
time
huh?
of ownership by the Tribune when John McDonough and others were over there.
So there's been an offer on the table for a while to sort of do a reunification, although only recently. McDonough didn't have the opportunity to give him a World Series ring, but the Ricketts
did. No, absolutely not. That came entirely from Tom and and Crane Kenny and the other members of the organization.
What do you know about the timing of this? It seemed to me a little odd, and a lot of us were really taken aback by it. How was it that yesterday was the day?
Well, it was really a combination of trying to coordinate schedules, mine notwithstanding, because Steve did want me to be present, but we were trying to coordinate Tom's schedule, Theo's schedule, Crane's schedule. Once the decision was made by Steve that he would graciously accept the ring, so there was no particular, newsworthy incident. I mean, it happened to actually fall on the trading deadline, although Theo had made his trade, I think, the day before. So it wasn't intended, John, to be, a day of particular significance.
I got it.
So how our schedules meshed, because I've been spending a lot of time in Florida working on another project and the like. So
sure, I got it. Well, so does he have the ring?
He does.
And does he wear it?
He's not wearing it now. I'm sure he may, but I think most people that get those rings, in my experience with some of my athletic clients who are lucky enough to get a Super Bowl or a championship ring, they tend to put them in a safety deposit box.
Yeah, no kidding. And they're almost impossible to wear unless you want people to talk about the ring.
Exactly. I mean, one of our issues with Steve has been, sadly, his personal security. And it's really a very large ring, one of the larger championship rings that I've seen in my experience. So you can't miss somebody wearing it, that's for sure. But it's
so Steve Bertrand and I, our news guy, got into quite a conversation about this yesterday. And I think we came at it from different points of view, although in general we're leaning in the same direction. We had some disagreements.
Oh, it's all good. But so, Frank, you seem to indicate there, and maybe I just missed this earlier, did Tom Ricketts personally give it to Steve? I mean, was there sort of a meeting with everyone together? And if so, was it at the ballpark?
Yes, we met at the executive offices, and Tom presented the ring to Steve personally.
What was the personal interaction there? What did they say to each other?
Well, I mean, without getting into, I don't want to say that they were confidential conversations. It was more of a personal discussion about Steve and what he'd been doing. It was just really kind of a free-flowing kind of conversation. There was nothing scripted at all. We talked about everything from baseball and the Cubs to, a few things that were going on and some baseball things, that were happening that day. So
you're doing a terrible job selling this moment, Frank. I just want you to know I'm listening for a soundbite, and you are not delivering.
We all want to cry, Frank.
Were there any tears?
I would like there to say that there was a burning bush, and there was, a bolt of lightning from somewhere, and that Tom or Steve or Theo or Crane had a particular script, but it was simply, four or five people sitting around and clearly the organization, making their thoughts known that this was, a small gesture on their part and that they appreciated what Steve had been through. And he had some very heartfelt, as he is. I mean, the statement that was released to the media was, 99% written by Steve, as was his final statement 14 years ago. Those are literally his words, not some public relations person or mine.
Are there plans for any sort of appearance with the Cubs?
No, there's no set plans on that. It's been made clear that, he's welcome at the park or anything else at any time, but there's no future schedule set at this time.
Does he go to games, Frank?
I have not commented on that in 14 years, and I won't start this afternoon.
I think I know why, but tell me why.
Just simply because were he to, believe it or not, you know, there still have been, you know, security threats, not recently, and we're hoping, obviously, that the events of the last 9 months, you would think that the passage of 14 years would be part of it, but, you know, whether it's social media or actual calls, sometimes there's threats, which is a sad commentary on society and where we're at. And I think one of the things that Steve touched on in a few sentences was, and I've said this myself in my own business, sometimes we lose sight of the fact that sports is just a game. You know, it's not life or death. We have life or death things taking place in the world every day. It's a form of entertainment. You all are in the entertainment business. I'm involved tangentially in the entertainment business. But sometimes sports takes on an aura, an importance far greater than it deserves. And certainly this incident, this game, you know, did that in epic proportions.
Yeah, no argument about that. Frank Murth is on the line. He's a sports consultant and attorney, a friend of the Bartmans, his son, you said, and Steve went to
Daughter was friends.
We're friends, and you've been representing him ever since that famous game in 2003. Yeah, I get that. You know, we were kind of deciphering the verbiage both from the Cubs and from Mr. Bartman yesterday, and I thought it had your touch or the touch of some sort of marketing person. It seemed to me to be a little corporate speak, a little sports marketing speak, and I don't mind that. I think the most important thing is, were those his thoughts, were those his experiences? And it was sort of chastising everybody for, as you just said, taking the game too seriously, for making a scapegoat out of somebody who doesn't deserve it. And words like burden were used in there, and life, and welcoming back. And it sounded like it was really painful for him to have endured all this time.
It was, John. There's no denying that. I mean, this, you know, athletes obviously are subject to criticism if they make a bad play, but they're criticized in the media, and it comes and it goes, and it's forgotten. You know, this was unique. This was sui generis. I mean, there certainly was there was no marketing intentions with that, because, as you know, and as history has borne us out, Steve has not tried to profit one penny from this, and certainly could have. Early on, when things were offered to him, we turned them over to the Juvenile Diabetes Foundation in honor of Ron Santo, and we've consistently turned down what you might call marketing opportunities or appearance fees.
How much money could he have made? I mean,
I would put it in the millions easily. You know, I mean, just without a question.
And he's like Bigfoot to a lot of us. You kind of believe there's one out there. Other people have never seen it and don't really know if there is a Bartman. This is a guy that still lives in the area, still is a Cubs fan, still goes to work every day, and yet I have not seen a picture of him. Maybe some folks have, but it's remarkable how you can hide in an era of smartphones if you really want to. And evidently, he really wants to.
He does. And again, it's not the type of life, John, don't misunderstand me, that he wants or has sought. It's an existence that has been required. I mean, he recently graduated and got an MBA from Notre Dame. He has a high position in finance, and you know, believe it or not, without going into the details, there were some special security things that, with the consent of the university, that we took place so as not to spoil that moment of achievement for him, but not to perhaps subject him to a current photograph or whatnot. And it is not what he nor I, you know, in any way desire, that type of anonymity, and certainly we hope that there will come a time when that would not be necessary. You know, I didn't necessarily think it was funny, but the New York Post writer during the series said that if Osama bin Laden had hired me, he'd still be alive. I didn't that
You, Frank Murtha, right? Yeah,
that
no kidding.
So, Frank, you're the expert, but I wonder sometimes if it would go away if you just ripped the Band-Aid off and came out and became much more public. That the longer Steve stays intentionally out of the spotlight, sort of the longer it drags on. And I just wonder what your thinking is on that.
Especially now since, boy, people would embrace him if he came out. But
I mean, believe me, that's not a new thought, and it's a good one. And I've had a debate with one of my brothers, among others, about that. And it's certainly something that, we'll give further consideration to. I realize that the more Greta Garbo-like, and I don't mean to draw that total analogy to it, and I understand where you're coming from with that comment, that it does. It's something certainly that Steve will continue to weigh, and he does not, relish this, kind of existence. Some years ago, an ESPN reporter, or at least an online reporter, followed him from his place of work, and wrote a story and kind of literally ambushed journalism, jumped out of a bush, kind of unprofessional, but that was a while ago.
I just think it's tacky that I saw his ring on eBay yesterday, and I thought it was quick, the instant.
Yeah, it was a little quick. Now you've got a good sense of humor there, John, but you won't see that there. I can tell you that.
One last thing. Just people in general are wondering what he's up to. You mentioned that he's got his MBA. He works in finance.
Yeah, he still works for the same.
Does he coach a little league team? Is he married? Does he have kids?
He's single. He has been steadily promoted by a big name international company. He's done well with them. They have been very supportive, certainly, of the notoriety of this as it periodically poked its head out of the ground. And, as he said in his statement, he's looking forward to moving forward. And we don't realize, I think the one thing that I have said is that when, if, and as he chooses to make a statement or appearance or speak, it'll be at a time, method, and manner of his choosing. But I think it's something that, we're going to give continued consideration to. And right. I think this was a good step forward.
Yeah.
Winning was a good step forward.
All right. I got to go, Frank. Thank you for your time. Sure. the invitation remains. If you and he just stroll into our studio someday, you, Frank Murtha, his attorney, and he, Steve Bartman, maybe low-key is the way to go. Just say, hey, we're walking down Michigan Avenue. Hey, there's John Williams.
He just happened to turn in. There's Williams.
And there's Williams. Window. Hey, let's go in and just say hi. He will not get a fairer and more considerate and more fascinating interview if he comes into our studio, okay?
I don't doubt that, John. I've always had a great deal of respect for you and your work product on the air. And I know you're back from the Northwoods for a while yet.
I'll stick around. All right, Frank. Well, thanks. That wasn't a yes, I'll bring him by, but I'll take it.
No, that was a yes. I heard it definitely yes.
Oh, did you hear that as a yes?
Goodbye, Frank. Yes. We'll see you later.
All right, you guys take care.
Frank Murtha, where I represent Steve Bartman. Well, if you have any music for us here, let me hear what you got. Yeah, it's a little, leave it, let it play. Hey, Steve.
Yeah.
Ask me, I'll be Frank Murtha, you be me.
Okay.
Ask me how the ring ceremony went where they gave the ring to Steve Bartman.
Hey, how did that ceremony go when they gave the ring to Steve Bartman?
Well, Crane Kenny was there, all the executives, Theo Epstein, the Ricketts family, and Steve Bartman stepped up. And we all kind of held hands and looked at the light as it shined on the rings. The diamonds reflecting a sort of cascade of light across Steve's face. And I said, Steve, we want you to have this. We're sorry. And Steve looked at me in the eyes and said, all the pain I've endured, all the countless nights, I've wanted this moment. Something like that. That's how you do that scene. This is John Williams in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. Steve, We just refreshed on my Facebook page the brackets you voted. We tabulated them. We're on to the next round of voting. Cuckoo Trump moments. None of the things that we're discussing today, yesterday, including Scaramucci, the police speech, and now these events are in the brackets because they didn't make the field. They happened after the field was set. They'll be in the January brackets, perhaps. But anyway, you can vote on the new round. That's just a for instance. I'll give you one game. Which of these was cuckooer? Which of these was more cuckoo? The Billy Bush tape or the Boy Scout speech? That's a 2-3 versus a 3 seed. I don't want to make that call. But I think I go with the Boy Scout speech because that was as president.
Well, but the Billy Bush tape knocked him out of the race. Oh, wait, no, it didn't.
I know. You cannot imagine something more horrible than the Billy Bush tape 2 weeks before the election, and he still won. So it really is a gigantic, fantastic Trumpian moment. How can that lose? But it's up against the Boy Scout speech. It's your call. I don't know how you handicap that one. That's in our brackets at Facebook.com. I'm King John on Facebook. You can like me there and then vote accordingly. We've got a nice video up starring Elif Garris as Carol Merrill. And the video and the brackets are all there. Our Domati Pongo is out in the field, as they say in the news business. Domati from the WGN Radio Newsroom. Where did we dispatch you today, Domati?
Well, today I am in Round Lake, John. I'm out here at Murphy Elementary School, which incurred about $2 million worth of damage after those floods, about 2 weeks to the day that happened.
You know, we don't talk enough on this show. I know some of the others do more than I do, but we would all probably do the community a favor if we spend a little more time talking about the flooding that was taking place and continues to take place. The rivers still swell and the rain still comes, so the initial shock may be over. But these people, I understand, Domati, are kind of still living with this on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I think you make a good point, which I think is really cool that we're doing this week, because so often we focus really, really intensely when those things first happened, but we kind of forget a few weeks later. And it's actually been 2 weeks to the day since July 12th when these floods first happened. So Murphy Elementary, of the 11 schools in that Round Lake School District under the superintendent that I spoke with, incurred the worst damage. So $2 million worth of damage. Now, the good news is that the school has full coverage under their insurance policy. So they'll have everything they need replenished through their insurance policy. But what they lost was 60 computers, 30 Chromebooks, lost their entire library, all of the books within it, their music room, their gym, the cafeteria, the food service area. It was truly a travesty there. But the worst of the worst are those homes right around the area. And this isn't an affluent area, mind you. The students, 550 students served there, but 100% free and reduced lunch at that school. And so that just to let you know kind of what the families might be going through when they lose some of their belongings in a tragedy like this.
Well, if anybody didn't need that, it's probably them and that school. In the news, Domati, we were playing the sound of a machine like a giant industrial dehumidifier. Were you in the school, and can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes, yeah, I was heading in there. So as we're outside and I'm doing the story, I'm like, what is that sound and what is that thing? It looked like something you'd see in a Transformers movie. And so they explained to me that what it actually does is it's a dehumidifier that keeps the moisture from settling too long in the building and helps to dry out the school, because they can't even begin to put flooring in the school until that whole thing is dried out. And all I could think about was the homes that can't afford these types of contraptions and this level of high-tech maintenance to keep things going. So inside the school, it's not even bearable to stay in there more than a few minutes. We're there for like 30 minutes, and it's extremely warm inside the school. And so administrators right now are doing their work from another campus away from where they were. And we kind of took a tour of the area. The whole front hallway in the lower level, all of those lockers have been taken out. I mean, really, it looks like an unfinished basement, as if they were building a house from the bottom up if you went into that bottom area. So that big, loud machine is supposed to help dry out the building so that they can start replacing drywall and flooring and getting some of that work done in time for school.
Where are those kids going to go to school? I presume not there this year.
Well, actually, and that's the good news, John. So even despite all of this, the floods in the basement of the school, or the lower level of the school, rather, reached up to like 5 feet in some areas. But it didn't affect the second floor. And they were really swift in starting to get some of these renovation projects underway. So school will start on time on August 21st. And that is the great news for this area. So now, even as folks are worrying about, okay, how can we lend our support? How can we volunteer? They said the best way to volunteer and to help out is to go to RLASFoundation.com. And on that website and with that foundation, that is how funds are disseminated through some of these needy families that really need that support, because for the most part, with school starting on time, the school is safe and secure. Everything will be okay in time for school. But those families are really what we're concerned about.
I'm thinking I'm going to repeat that website in just a second, Domati. Our Domati Pongo from WGN Radio News, he joins me on Saturdays, too. I hope you hear us there. Saturday mornings at 10 a.m. is in Round Lake at this Murphy School. I wonder what it smells like and how humid it's going to be, how comfortable or not it's going to be on that second floor in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, that's a very good point. I mean, it was terrible. I talked to some residents out there, actually, some parents of students there, and they said it was like you said, it's like my own little Lake Michigan, outside, but right outside their homes, because several feet of water kind of, and it's like outside the school, it's somewhat of a hill. So you have these currents going down the street, several feet of water going down the street. They said it looked like a river at the time when this first occurred. And so I was asking the principal, I said, his name is Phil Georgia, how can a school located right near a retention pond receive the worst of the flooding? And so he kind of explains what this retention pond really is. And it's kind of complex for me to understand. So here it is, what he has to say.
Here comes.
I think Elif has that there.
Here comes.
So what happened on the, July 11th, 12th, is we had so many storms, so much water, so fast, that the water got up high enough and killed the electrical panels that were running the pumps. So once the pumps couldn't pump any water out, the water just came up really fast.
Yeah.
And it kind of just stayed there as high as 6 feet. So we've got this retention pond in this area that serves as somewhat of a bowl with these electrical storm pumps that are supposed to keep this water pumping out from the area near the school and kind of supporting all of the houses and homes in those areas.
Yeah.
And it actually has the adverse effect because the electrical system broke down.
Okay, well, I'm no Lou Manfredini, but it would seem to me like if you're going to have pumps powered by electricity that take the water out, then you need to make them, I don't know, waterproof so that they don't short out, because when you need them is when it's going to be wet. So they have to be impervious to moisture. I'm sure somebody else there has said the same thing. Domati Pongo is in Round Lake. He is at the Murphy Elementary School. And the good news is, as Domati said, that they expect that the kids will be able to start on time. You said that the foundation people can make a donation to is RLAS Foundation. Is that RLASFoundation.com, Domati?
You got it.
Okay, R, the letter R, L is in Larry, A is in astronaut, S is in sissy, RLASFoundation.com. Is that right?
That is correct, and that will have all the information that folks need if they want to lend their support in any way. The school is accepting donations and books because they want to replenish their library, and also just they're fielding requests from families in the area who need that assistance as well.
I'm really glad you're there, Domati. Let's talk more about this on Saturday. Thanks for filing the report.
No problem. Thank you for having me, John, and making time.
WGN Radio's Domati Pongo. It's 1:50. Steve Bertrand's very busy in the newsroom, and yet he does have time to play handyman poker, I think.
Always for you, John.
After this, I'm John Williams.
Handyman, handyman, does what Lou Manfredini can. Fixes tubes in a flash. Guess who just saved some cash? Hey there.
I wrote this song, and I don't know what fixes tubes in a flash means. What was I even talking about?
He's got liquid plumber blood.
Old TVs?
Yeah, I know. That's a stupid thing to reference. Nobody's doing that on Handyman Poker. Fixes tubes in a flash? What was I doing? Okay, we do this on Mondays. Today, Tuesday, we sit around and brag about what it was that we did over the weekend that was super handy, super clever. You want me to go first, Steve, or do you want to go?
You can go ahead and go first,
Steve.
John,
I assembled an indoor-outdoor table tennis facility It came in parts, and we had to put the 200 pounds of it together. My son, Grant, helped me with it. I would say that we split it.
Excuse me, can I interrupt?
Yeah.
To let the record show you had help. Okay, go ahead.
I would like to say that it was a 50-50 proposition. It was more like 95-5, but the table did get assembled. Wheels had to be attached, safety features installed, and the delicate balance of when you fold it up had to match perfectly. We assembled an indoor-outdoor table tennis facility from scratch. Your thoughts?
Can I ask, did you have instructions?
It came with a helpful video.
Okay, thank you. Well, I have these basement windows with sliding screens in them, and the dirt accumulates. We just had our house restained and repainted, and so I hosed out the tracks for the windows, and I had to go into the basement and actually reach over debris in the basement to take the screens out so I could get both tracks. No instructions for screen removal. That's all I'll say.
Boy, this is my week, isn't it?
I hope so.
I assembled an indoor-outdoor table tennis facility with my son. I mean,
And then sent me a picture.
I did. I said, checked. I said, ha! That's, I believe, what I said in my screen grab. And it's just a fantastic thing. Now I got to get somebody to come over and play table tennis with me. But in the meantime, oh, the glory of that achievement. Now, you've got a decision to make at home. Which of these two handyman poker hands do you think is better? Steve's hosing off a screen, or my son assembling a table tennis facility? Just text to 312-981-7200, John wins. Text John wins to 312-981-7200, and any other pertinent comments of glory that you'd like to share with me. And then we'll review the results after the 2 o'clock edition of WGN Radio News. Well, if we don't even have to go right to the break here, right? We can sort of live off of this for a little longer. Am I correct?
Yeah, you can revel in this.
I did it well. And all you did was put together a ping pong table. I don't think either of us should be bragging very much.
Think about it. It comes unassembled. It's a 200-pound indoor-outdoor table tennis facility. And
it's a ping-pong table.
You couldn't even
get the guy to bring it into your house.
This is a different story. The thing folds up like gossamer wings, and then the cover goes down over it. You get one thing wrong on that, not only does it not work, but it's a dangerous trap for people. Fingers, arms could be severed if that thing just drops. But no, we did it correctly, and it's really just a beautiful thing to see. I may post a picture of it. It is now my screen picture for all of my media, for all of my social platforms. After the news, and again, 312-981-7200, text, who wins handyman poker this week? Steve, host off a screen. John, assembled a sports facility. Joel Stein, in the latest edition of Time Magazine, has an article headlined, "Mr. President, I demand you do your duty and insult me, please." He said, "President Trump spends more time on journalism criticism than Columbia's graduate school. He's insulted journalists I haven't even heard of, and I'm a journalist. He has viciously taunted Glenn Beck, MSNBC's Mika Brzezinski, The Vogue's, The View's Joy Behar, Yahoo News's Lisa Belkin, The New York Times writer Charles Blow, Frank Bruni, David Brooks, Michael Barbaro, and these are just the bees. So I do feel deeply insignificant because Trump has not once threatened, mocked, discredited, or belittled me, leaving me feeling like a washed-up celebrity in the front row of a Don Rickles show." Yeah, really, by the way, the texts are just pouring in. This one from Lou Manfredini. So Joel Stein joins us after the news. Let's just see what...
I think Lou's asking for some advice.
"Both of you, stop talking. You're embarrassing me. It's turned into handyman shoots and ladders," says Lou Manfredini.
I've got that.
"And not handyman poker."
Let the record show it's always your idea to play. Well, that's not true.
We're going to try and play every Monday or Tuesday if the news bumps this important segment. But I'm sorry. I think I deserve a little something today, Lou. By the way, Lou, you can always call 312-981-7200 instead of pinging my personal number here. But I think I've got something this time, and I'd like to enjoy it. Okay, Joel Stein joins us after the news. He's always funny. We'll talk a little bit about why the president isn't insulting him. And then we'll visit with Renee Merle. She is a reporter who has been following the Pharma Bro story for a while now. This is the guy described as the most hated man in America, the pharmaceutical executive, the young, brash kid who owns a company and raised the price of some drugs 1,500% or 1,000%. We'll also talk to Greg Trotter, the business reporter at the Chicago Tribune, about the soda tax. Today's the last day to buy the sweet drinks without paying the upgrade, and he'll tell you what does and doesn't apply.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
But
here's John Williams.
I already did. Come up with another one for you this hour, and I think I know what it's going to be. It's 2:08. I'm John, and you're listening to The John Williams Show. We do this Monday through Friday from 1 to 3. I sure appreciate you joining us. We're in the Allstate Showcase Studio right on Michigan Avenue, downtown Chicago. We do a Saturday version, too. But before we do any of that, we want to go ahead and introduce our next guest. Not many guests have their very own theme songs. But shoot now, my mouse isn't working.
You want me to sing it?
No, I gotta hit the button. This is a show about a scrawny guy named Joel Stein. In real life he writes for a magazine called Time. But now he's got his own cartoon show on VH1, in which he works for a TV show made up. Joel Stein. Even though the show has got a standard sitcom feel. From Time Magazine, had his own cartoon TV show once. It ran in Canada. And the chorus went, hey Joel, what do you know, you got your own show. Try not to blow it, cause if you're not funny, then you'll soon be gone. Make it fill the time with some more Lenny Kravitz songs. Then you'll be back in obscurity where you belong. Hey Joe. Fountains of Wayne, when they weren't singing Hey Julie or Stacy's Mom, singing about our friend Joel Stein. Hi Joel, how are you?
Oh, thanks for doing that as always.
Yeah, I forget now, does anybody get paid when we do that?
I was going to ask you, but I was afraid of opening up that Pandora's box. I am assuming you're not paying anyone.
I don't think Pandora pays their authors very well.
Well, do you ever get any checks from that failed TV? I mean, that little scene TV show?
I mean, when we created it and wrote it, I got checks. But, I mean, no, we would only get checks if people watched it. So I probably owe them money conceptually.
Here's what you wrote in the July 31st edition of Time Magazine. In an article headline, Mr. President, I demand you do your duty and insult me, please. In part, you said President Trump spends more time on journalism criticism than Columbia's graduate school. He's insulted journalists I haven't even heard of, and I'm a journalist. He's viciously taunted Glenn Beck, MSNBC's, is it Mika or Micah? I keep forgetting. Brzezinski, Mika, The View's Joy Behar, Yahoo News's Lisa Belkin, Charles Blow, Frank Bruni, David Brooks, Michael Barbaro from the New York Times, and these are just the bees. So I feel deeply insignificant. You liken yourself to somebody with a front row seat at a Don Rickles show. Wow.
Yeah, like a washed-up celebrity who doesn't matter anymore. It's rough out there. I've tried everything to get him to insult me, and nothing's worked.
And you've gotten people mad at you when you weren't even trying in the past.
Exactly. Like, this is a higher bar than you would think.
I mean, you're good at this, Joel. You're good at ticking people off. You're good at getting people mad at Time Magazine, for that matter.
You know, it occurred to me after I wrote it that what I obviously should do and should have done for the column is go to the source. I mean, trying to anger him from a Time Magazine column is like, you know, angering someone who doesn't read by writing something. So I need to go on Fox and Friends and tell them off, right? That'll do it.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I don't know how you're going to do that, but clearly
I'll
that's
just go on that show a lot. I'll just go on and pretend to talk about something else and just say one horrible thing about him.
Wait a minute. You've been on Fox and Friends before?
Oh, when I lived in New York, it was right across the street. I used to go on all the time with the Deuce and Kilmeade. And when my book came out, I went on too. Yeah.
Well, you went on. You were on my show when your book came out. I mean, that didn't mean anything. Yeah. But I didn't know that you were a regular. So tell me what the vibe is. Tell me what that show is like. What's it like being on Fox and Friends?
Oh, I really like those guys. I mean, the woman at that point was rotating a lot. So, but it was always the Deuce, Steve Ducey, who I believe was a weather person. For the beginning of his career.
Yeah.
And he kind of has that vibe, kind of like doofusy, funny, silly, a little clueless. And then Kilmeade, I believe, is and was a sports reporter. And he's got that kind of like, you know, nice guy, Republican bro kind of attitude.
Mm-hmm.
I as people, I like them.
That's funny to me. And then what's the staff like? I've so been intrigued by the people that work on a Rush Limbaugh or a Sean Hannity or Fox and Friends. Are they all totally drinking the Kool-Aid? What's that like?
No, I mean, there are plenty of unpleasant people who are liberals who work at MSNBC. And there are plenty of, you know, my one interaction or two interactions with Bill O'Reilly weren't great, although I liked him on the radio better than I did on TV. But he seemed maybe not like the most fun person to hang out with. But Hannity seems like, from all reports, seems like a pretty good guy to hang out with and nice to his staff and stuff. But, you know, you've heard stories about MSNBC reporters, you know, anchors who weren't so nice to their staff.
I have not. I really don't have a feel for what the staffs are like at all. And I'm not even thinking so much who's nice and who's not nice to their staff. But, you know, does everybody on Rachel Maddow's show a frothing at the mouth, liberal, you know, like that? And is everybody that works at Fox and Friends, like when they're saying or doing something on Fox and Friends, the big graphic of the president glowingly putting up his tweets and then treating them seriously, is everybody high-fiving and giving each other a thumbs up over there? Are they all on page?
No, it's a job. No, they're busy booking people and getting people on and trying to make the wheels run. No, they're not. You know, I'm sure most of them are some level of conservative, although I don't know because they're right in the middle of Manhattan, so maybe not even all or most of them. But I'm sure most of them are. But no, they're just, you know, they're just people putting out the news. I don't think there's a glee in everything they do.
Yeah. Back to your column, though. Your point is you're trying to get the president to notice you, and it really is maybe a point of pride for some of these journalists when the president says, Bruni, failure. Glenn Thrush, what a loser, right?
Yeah, I mean, the president's not supposed to know journalists' names. I mean, maybe one or two that cover him, but he studies this stuff. I mean, it's the media, the mainstream media, we forget this, 2 years ago or less, was junk. It was disappearing. It was irrelevant. It was being replaced by, you know, YouTube and bloggers and Twitter and, you know, Facebook. We were meaningless. And now he's given us this import that, you know, I don't think we've had for 100 years.
100 may be a wrong number, but I think that's a fascinating observation and one I have not heard people make. So, A, nice job there, Joel.
Thank you.
But also, you are onto something. I mean, you're right. When all of a sudden everybody could do a blog, everybody could post on various platforms, and we worried that they were going to replace journalists. Say what you want about your confidence in the media, but we are sure paying attention to them. They do seem to be more important players now, don't they?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's still shrinking as far as the number of important players, you know, which is logical now that all these are national publications instead of local publications, thanks to the internet and mobile. But yeah, we were left for dead a year ago. And now the president is at war with us. Like we're equals. It's crazy. Like we have nuclear arsenals.
Yeah.
Like, he is that way.
No kidding. Except there you are, you know, running around on a horse with a paper sword. He's not paying any attention to you.
No, I know. I got to fix this. I go on Fox and Friends. That's my solution.
You have any plans to get on Fox and Friends? Like when this piece came out, I know it was in last week's edition dated yesterday, but I mean, you didn't get a call from them?
No, you know what? But I'm not a proud man. I can call them.
Here's how you concluded your piece. So then you go through this sort of description of what you and I are discussing a little bit. And then you wrote at the end this, because when you have a president so threatened by facts and opinions that oppose his views, that he tweets about the media more than his policies, it makes being a journalist more important than it's ever been in my career. It also makes it way more fun. I think that last sentence is where some people might take umbrage with you. Is it more fun being a journalist or a columnist or a funny guy like you these days?
Anyone who says otherwise is a liar. I mean, the same way that all journalists who are gutsy enough, which does not include me, want to cover a war because it's the most exciting thing. Yes, covering this presidency is so much more fun than covering the Obama presidency. I mean, think about this week. More happened this week than in like a year of an Obama presidency. It's way more interesting. You get way more eyeballs. There's much more to think about and say and digest. It's more fun for sure.
Well, I know lots of journalists and lots of commentators, columnists. I kind of know a pretty broad sweep of people in the media. And I get your point. But I think they're also, all of them, weary of the abuse that they're taking for doing their jobs.
Well, they're fools for that. No, this is
you didn't take heat for this piece? Weren't people saying terrible things to you on social media?
No, no one reads anymore. You have to be on TV or video to get people to get riled up nowadays.
I think
it's disheartening that half of the, you know, voters, I don't know about half the country, but half the voters probably think everything that mainstream journalists write is fake. And it makes it hard to go cover things. I was talking to someone about visiting them in a very red county, and they said, you know, after our experience with CNN, we're not talking to any mainstream media. So it makes it frustrating. It makes it hard, but it does make it more fun.
What is fake news to you then? You mentioned that a couple times in your column. I wonder what that means.
That's weird that we don't know what that means anymore, because Trump does that schoolyard thing where he just repeats what the other person said and as if it's you who did it, like you're the puppet. But no, we know what fake news means. It could either mean purposely. It's facts that aren't true. They can be on purpose or they can be crazy conspiracy theories, you know, but they're not true.
Okay, so maybe the Seth Rich story is fake news. You know, the story about the DNC staffer who was murdered. And Fox is very interested in trumpeting that as some sort of conspiracy relative to WikiLeaks and stuff and the Democrats. So that's fake news. The president said on Twitter today that he's going to continue to use Twitter because it's the only way for him to get the truth out.
Yeah. Well, no one checks you on Twitter. That part in my column where I said that he tweets more about the press and the media than he does about his own policies is a fact. He complains about the media not covering his policies, but he himself on Twitter talks about the media more than any policy, more than, I believe, all his policies together, but certainly more than any one policy.
Well, the White House press briefing today with Sarah Sanders was sort of a tit for tat with her and the press about the stories they're choosing to cover and how and why they're covering them versus what she thinks they should be doing. She said, why aren't you talking more about Hillary Clinton giving up the uranium and things like that? I'm not exactly sure all that she said.
They're still fighting the election. Can they do that for 4 years? It's so weird.
I'm worried that all, you know, so here's the chance for the media to interact with the White House, and they're fighting about the way they fight. They're not even fighting about the issues anymore.
Right.
They're arguing about the arguments.
It's all about politics, which is just, yeah. I haven't watched enough of her, but I've talked to her dad a bunch of times, and he's full of life and excitement, and she seems so drained. Like, is her mom like that? Like, where is that coming from?
I don't know. I think she's doing her job pretty well.
She likes to point out she has three preschool kids at home.
Oh, does she? I haven't seen enough of those.
But you know what? The mooch has a newborn. It wasn't holding him back energy-wise.
Yeah. What's your take on the 11-day diet that we were all on there?
Oh, I loved it. It was kind of amazing.
You know, it's funny because you're refreshingly not worried about the Republic. You're treating this as, I don't know, a romp, and some people are a little more sober about it, Joel.
I'm very worried about the Republic. However, the best we can hope for upon the election of Donald J. Trump was with the J, all my years of living in New York, I'd never seen. But on the election of Donald J. Trump, the best we could hope for was incompetence over danger, right? And we've been given heaps and heaps of incompetence and very little danger. So I don't know if that will keep up. You know, one crisis could change all that. I'm not blind to this, but each step of incompetence is heartening to me.
Right. So when he gives a speech to the Boy Scouts, which seems unhinged, untethered, you go, well, that's just another thing to ridicule and marvel at, but it's all harmless. But you think, okay, but that guy who is telling cocktail party jokes to the Boy Scouts is the guy who's going to determine if we go to nuclear war over North Korea. I mean,
that's my panic upon election. Since election, every time he does the Boy Scout speech, and every time he proves to be incompetent, he's just less and less likely to do something like get, you know, kick Mexicans out or whatever it is he wants to do.
Something that's really important.
Yeah.
Maybe the best thing is then for him to keep tweeting and, you know, giving speeches to the police officers where he says, listen, police brutality is no biggie. Yeah. I'm jiggy with it. So maybe if he just focuses on those fun things for him, but inconsequential in the grand scheme of things, we'll be better off.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. No, my hope was when he was elected was that he would just go around the world acting like president and let, you know, Mike Pence and Paul Ryan and McConnell run things. Yeah. Now, of course, I didn't know that he didn't like to go to other countries because they don't have his fast foods that he loves. But this is kind of close to it. He just goes around to rallies and repeats things.
You know, we've got brackets up right now for the
My God. I love the brackets. I'm jealous that I didn't come up with the brackets.
Well, you could write a Time magazine article about our brackets.
That's not a bad idea.
Well, think about that, Joel. We tweeted a match, so if you want to retweet it to all of your... you must have dozens of followers, right?
Tens. Is that different than dozens of scores? I'm not sure. I don't know all the terms.
What are you working on now as I let you go, Joel? This is where you sort of pitch for something that would be actually beneficial
to you.
Okay,
I'm going to pitch, but can I pick my favorite bracket item?
Oh, sure, yeah. We've got our brackets up there. 20 teams, crazy cuckoo Trump moments. What are you liking in the tournament?
It's not the most entertaining. It's the most crazy, correct?
Well, that's the idea.
The craziest, right?
Well, your call.
Well, the most entertaining, which I think is not the game, is definitely Covfefe.
Well, Covfefe is in there. Do we vote on Covfefe today, David? Covfefe is actually something you can vote on today.
Yeah, that was my, as far as entertainment, the fact that he, like, fell asleep mid-tweet and there's no staff to fix that.
Covfefe.
Amazing to me.
I think Covfefe is still up, because he never takes tweets down. He took that one down,
David? No, he bragged about Covfefe the next day. He's like, I hope you're entertained. Enjoy.
Yeah. Okay, so Covfefe was the most entertaining one. What was the craziest one?
The craziest one was the Obama wiretapping.
I mean, think of all the crap that started for him with that one tweet.
Yeah. Well, why would you? I mean, that's a true nut conspiracy theorist who just sort of heard something and then made it up. I mean, that's a huge, beyond huge accusation. And he's so crazy, they just kind of fade away. But it's crazy.
Well, we got the brackets up. Like me on Facebook, Joel Stein. I'm King John on Facebook. We'd be honored if you'd fill them out accordingly. The prompts are there. All you got to do is just type in the comments section which one, each day that we ask you, which one you think wins that round.
That's a weird way to vote. You type in the comment section?
Yeah, I know. That's what we did.
By the way, I watched those videos. Your sartorial leanings are falling apart there. Like, you were wearing a suit and a pocket square, and then you're halfway to, like, cargo shorts at this point.
I moved recently. And a lot of my clothes aren't as organized as
Joel, don't do whatever you want, but don't help him bring up the whole moving
when
thing.
When we moved, Joel, we went from 3,000 square feet to 1,300 square feet. Of the 1,300 square feet, I've got to put in all my clothes, pocket squares, and fancy shoes. And right now, I don't know where some of them are. So today, for instance, when I got dressed for this show, I put on some cream-colored slacks. And yes, I call them slacks. Then I put on a sort of aqua green shirt and then brown shoes with orange trim.
Joel, he took all the books he doesn't have room for, he put them in boxes, and he brought them here to the hallway because he thinks we want to pick through them.
They're really nice books, Joel. I think one of them might be yours.
I got that one.
So thanks for asking, Joel.
You have clothes for radio at this point.
Okay, this interview is over. Anyway, if you want to vote, Joel, do. And if I can do anything for you down the road, you let me know, okay?
Okay, bye.
Read Joel Stein in Time magazine. The July 31st edition has his piece, Mr. President, I demand you do your duty and insult me, please. It's 2:26. This is WGN. My sister Jean was telling us over the weekend how much time and effort she's put into finding a good way to do the eclipse. You know, it's coming from the south. West, heading northeast across southern Illinois. I don't know how much darkness we're going to experience in Chicago, but it's going to go total black where I went to school in Carbondale, Marion, southern Illinois, places like that. So Gene is like looking at Airbnbs, which are totally jacking the rates down there. And by the way, the fact that they even have Airbnbs is amazing to me in southern Illinois. Trust me, I've spent a lot of time there. But now they're doing it, Southern Illinois University, at Carbondale, a big festival, and there's just all kinds of things going on. And finding a place to stay, and then what do you do, and should you go to the stadium where the Salukis play, and they're going to do an event right in the stadium. It's going to be filled with people as it gets dark. I think that's kind of cool. I don't know what to do and how to do it, or where to stay. We're going to touch on that down the road, but Ro and Ann are going to get you updated on that after 3 as well. You know, there are 2 to trust at 4. Watch Ben Bradley and Lourdes Duarte on Chicago's very own WGN-TV Evening News, and that's weeknights from 4 to 5. One last thing. Joel Stein said from Time Magazine that the thing that he thought was the craziest in our crazy Trump moments brackets was Covfefe, or at least that was the funniest, his nodding off tweet. That is up against when Donald Trump, the candidate, invited women that he said Bill Clinton assaulted to one of the debates. That's up against that. So which of those was head-slapping crazier? You have to decide when you like me on Facebook. I'm King John there. Disgraced former pharmaceuticals executive pharma bro Martin Shkreli, the guy that's on trial, the jury's determining his fate right now, has put himself forward as an unlikely candidate for the recently vacated White House communications director job. He said if Scaramucci's out, Shkreli wants in. Shkreli, who's currently on trial for securities fraud in New York, wrote on his Facebook page, his attorneys and the judge all said, you need to stop with the social media while you are being tried for a case that could put you away for years. But he won't. He can't help himself. He's so taunting fate or the authorities that are telling him to shut up. Renee Merle's on a phone line, Washington Post white-collar crime reporter. Renee, this is John. Welcome back. Thanks for joining us again on WGN Radio. How are you?
I'm doing good. Thanks so much for having me.
I don't know if you knew that. It's not all that important to the story, but he said he'll take Scaramucci's job on Facebook. How about that?
When this is all over, I'm sure he'll take whatever job's available. If he is able to avoid charges or not found not guilty, it's like a whole new life for him.
You think that that's unlikely? That's what that sounds like.
Well, I mean, I don't know whether it is as likely or not. I mean, the prosecution case was pretty strong. They pointed to a lot of lies that he told over several years to his investors. But on the other hand, his defense attorney, he hired Benjamin Brofman. He's a celebrity attorney who's represented everybody from mobsters to Sean Combs, P. Diddy. So, you know, he has a really good chance of getting off as well. His defense attorney was, I couldn't say anything more than just like a chanting. He was mesmerizing.
Really? Very entertaining case that way?
He was, yes. His defense attorney was very entertaining. He told jokes. He told stories during closing arguments. He was just much more theatrical than the prosecutors, who were pretty much straight-laced and going by the facts. And then his attorney, Shkreli's attorney, would get up and tell funny stories. And at one point during the closing arguments, he held up a bag of potato chips to explain how hard it is to get something done and talked about the production process for a bag of potato chips. It's just hard to forget those sorts of things. Whereas the charges against him are really complex and technical. And I could see some jurors being kind of swept up in that.
You might comment on this. His client is utterly unlikable. Maybe it's helpful that his attorney comes across as very likable and charming so that he might transfer some of that to the man on trial.
It's something that I was reminded of just now. I'm basically waiting for a jury verdict, and I was just in the courtroom, and the judge was responding to a question from the jury. And there you had Brofman sitting there, erect, looking really experienced, obviously a veteran attorney. And then Shkreli next to him was folding his arm, messing with his hair, you know, at some point was putting his head down on the table. He just didn't look, you know, quite as dignified next to somebody like Brofman. And Brofman obviously was somebody, he even made fun of his height during one point, said, when this trial started, I didn't have gray hair. He's just relatable and likable.
So Martin Shkreli is this young, whip-snap, smart money guy who then became a chief executive of a pharmaceutical company, famously raised the price of life-saving drugs, and was very costly to a lot of people. And he said, I would have raised the price even more. By what percent? Was it 1,500 or 15,000 that he raised the price of that drug?
He raised it 5,000.
5,000%. Amazing. Okay, and so then he says, I would have done it more. I have a fiduciary responsibility. It's all about making money. He doesn't care what people think about him. But he's not on trial for that. He's on trial for what almost sounds like a Ponzi scheme. Just sort of give me a couple of the nuts and bolts on that, Renee.
Yes, it's a small Ponzi scheme. He started two hedge funds. When the first hedge fund blew up, he basically, made a bad bet on a stock and the hedge fund was broke. Instead of telling his investors that, he raised more money. And then he used that money to pay off some investors, but also to start a pharmaceutical company, Retrofin. So, the part of what the prosecution case is that he just constantly lied. He lied about how big his hedge fund was. He lied when his hedge fund blew up. He didn't tell his investors that. He told them the hedge fund was still doing well. And he used lies to entice more investors to give him more money to start this new hedge fund and so he could start a pharmaceutical company. So it is Ponzi-like, not nearly at the scale of a Bernie Madoff, but what you could call a small Ponzi scheme.
It's an interesting defense, isn't it? His attorney is saying, but nobody lost money. In fact, pretty much everybody made money on this. So where's the crime? And my observation has been, well, if they had, there would have been. It shouldn't be about the outcome. It should be about the process.
And that's what the prosecution said. And during closing arguments, the prosecutor gave a really good analogy. If you rob a bank and then you rob a second bank to pay back the first bank, you still rob that first bank.
There you go.
So you can't rob Peter to pay Paul is basically the prosecutor's argument. Another thing the defense attorney said is, look, these investors are rich, they're sophisticated, and they got even richer. Don't feel sorry for them. And he said this is just, rich people BS. I'll be careful of that. He said it was rich people BS. And the prosecutor said that it doesn't matter. If you're rich, you still can be a victim of fraud. And these investors were a victim of fraud.
Yeah, even if they can sustain it or even if they profited from it. It's 242, 342 where you are. So the jury's had the case for a couple of days now. Any idea what that means, Renee?
I'm not going to guess at this point, but I will say this is a really complex case. The jury got 90 pages of instructions, and they're having to parse things like fraudulent intent and securities fraud and the definition of assets under management. So, and they just came back today with their first question. So I can't even hazard a guess on whether we're going to be down here for another week or whether we could have something tonight.
If he's convicted, he could go to jail for how many years? 20, right?
20 years, yes.
I guess that would be convictions on all counts with the maximum penalty served. Here again, I want to ask you, what are the smart people saying? He's going to get 2 years with some times, blah, blah, blah. I wonder how it's going to shake out.
If he is convicted, the attorneys that I have talked to said they would expect him to get on the lower end, that he would get a couple of years. And depending on, which of the, facing eight charges, and depending on which of the charges he's actually convicted of, if he is convicted, he might get probation. So the fact that his investors were made whole, even if it was fraud, might work as his advantage when it comes to sentencing. That'll be up to the judge.
Does he suffer from any kind of personality disorder or psychological or social illness?
His defense attorney wants you to think that. He wants you to think that this is a strange, quirky guy, brilliant, but strange. And he's talked several times about Shkreli's anxiety and that some of his investors thought he might be on the autism spectrum. So he's made a big deal and kind of played up that Shkreli is a unique figure, somebody who met an investor one time wearing a stethoscope and fluffy slippers, who, you know, had slept at his office in a sleeping bag for years. You know, he's not like your normal guy.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, the more you talk about him, the more I think, yeah, I think I know what that is. I don't know if that's a defense or if that helps him or hurts him, but boy, what an odd duck. And so we're waiting to see the verdict, and we will ask you to join us again when we find out more. Any last notes or observations from you, Renee?
Well, I would note that you kind of started in this segment by noting that he hasn't played down his social media activity since his trial. He's gotten in trouble for talking to reporters in the courthouse, but outside the courthouse, he remains very active, and he remains very confident. If you listen to the podcast he does, the live stream videos, I should say, or if you, just looking at his mannerisms, he's pretty confident that he's going to get off. We'll see if that's true.
Almost makes you want to root against him. That should be beside the point, but somebody that cocky, you want him to come down a notch, you know?
He's been very boisterous of how strong of a defense attorney he has. And that is so he hasn't been chastened at all by the number of years he's facing or anything else. The only thing that will probably chasten him is if he actually is convicted.
Renee Merle is the Washington Post white collar crimes reporter. Okay, Renee, keep up the good work. We'll visit again.
All right. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
246 WGN. Okay, so today I think, help me, Steve, maybe you know, today is the last day in Cook County to buy soda without paying a tax, right?
Well, without paying the new tax.
Yeah.
You can still buy it today with taxes.
Oh, hooray.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's going to double on some purchases, depending on how much you buy, et cetera, and what it is.
There's a vending machine here where I buy soda.
Yeah, I know.
And it costs $2.15.
$2.15 for how many ounces? That'd be maybe the 16-ounce soda?
20 ounces.
A 20-ounce. Well, first of all, you shouldn't be drinking a 20-ounce soda, Steve.
Thanks, Mom.
It's a 20-ounce. You're getting a big old family-sized soda. And it's costing how much?
It's a single-serving 20-ounce soda for $2.15. And what are you laughing at?
I would never pay $2.15.
You bought a ping-pong table for your outside.
$2.15 for a soda is offensive out of a vending machine.
There's really no other place to buy it.
Well, we have water fountains for, God, I am your mother now. Shut me up. Okay, so a reporter from the Tribune talks to us about how this all stacks up. Got a few minutes. By the way, Aleph, where are we taking this topic up to? Are we going to the top of the hour or till 3 minutes till? Top, excellent. By the way, Steve Bertrand, in our Handyman Poker today, where you and I brag on Monday or Tuesday about the things that we accomplished over the weekend.
Yeah.
We call it Handyman Poker. You get to vote. Elif is joining us now for the final tally on the Handyman Poker competition. You bragged about hosing off a screen.
I didn't brag about it, but it's all I had.
And I assembled an indoor-outdoor table tennis facility
You bragged about that.
Putting together a ping pong table. Mine was dangerous, perilous, and complicated. Yours was hosing off a screen. Who won, Elif?
John, you won.
What was the final score?
19-17.
Wow, you should be embarrassed by that. I watched a screen and barely lost to you. I'm just saying.
Are you sure about the tabulation on that?
I'm sure.
17
I will...
people said that his effort was as impressive as mine?
Yeah, and I disagree. I mean,
thank you.
People are sorely mistaken on this one.
Thank
She's
you.
Your direct hire. You had help from your son and reading instructions.
Greg Trotter's in our studio now. He is a business reporter at the Chicago Tribune. Whose effort do you think was more impressive? Steve hosing down a screen over the weekend or my assembling an indoor-outdoor table tennis facility?
Oh, I think I'm going to go with the table tennis
Thank
facility.
Thank you. And he's a reporter, so I'm going to count that time.
Totally objective.
Five. So today is the last day in Cook County, then. This is kind of your beat, the beverage industry.
That's right.
This is the last day to in Cook County buy sweet beverages without paying an extra penny per ounce on some of the beverages, but not others.
That's right.
I got to tell you, I'm so glad in your article today that you mentioned LaCroix is not, and I don't understand that, but I love me some LaCroix. I think it's the perfect beverage. It quenches your thirst. It's carbonated. It feels kind of sweet, but it's not soda. It's water. I don't know how they do that, but it's definitely sweet. How is that not being taxed a penny an ounce?
Well, LaCroix and other similar flavored waters are they're just flavored. They're not sweetened, and so this is where it gets a little confusing with this tax. I actually had a reader email me and say my LaCroix is going to be taxed, but that's not true. There are some flavored waters that will be taxed that are sweetened, but there are others. Some of the most popular out there, LaCroix, Perrier, Solel, they will not be taxed because they're flavored and not sweetened. So it's going to be sort of on the consumer to actually look at the ingredients and determine whether their drink is sweetened or not.
Or just see if it's a lot more expensive than it was before. Is there a logic to it? Is there a rhyme or reason to it? Because you say it's flavored, not sweetened, but the flavor is sweeter. So to me, it's a distinction without a great difference. Is there any logic to it that you can explain to us?
Well, under the sweetened beverage ordinance, this tax applies to beverages, non-alcoholic beverages that are sweetened with both caloric and non-caloric sweeteners. So caloric would be sugar, high fructose corn syrup, sucrose. Non-caloric would be aspartame, stevia, and some others. And so it's essentially sugar and artificially sweetened beverages. Now, sugar-sweetened beverages have been linked to various health risks, obesity, diabetes, heart condition. The science is still sort of out on the health impact of artificially sweetened beverages.
Artificially sweetened meaning diet sodas, you mean?
That's right. Diet sodas with the aspartame or even the stevia. So Cook County is basically President Tony Preckwinkle has been pretty forthright about this from the beginning in that, you know, this is about the money the county needs first and foremost.
Yeah.
It could have a beneficial public health impact, and that, you know, the county has said, but it's really they need this money to sustain services going forward.
But you point out what I think is a little illogical. So you say not taxed Tropicana orange juice, right?
If it's 100% fruit or vegetable juice, it won't be taxed.
Oh, well, maybe this does make sense because we should be drinking that kind of juice. That's healthy juice. But tax would be ready to drink sweetened coffee drinks such as bottled Starbucks Frappuccinos. Those will be taxed, but we shouldn't be drinking that stuff anyway. That's not good for us.
Yeah, so this is another sort of confusing point for some in the ordinance that you can buy those Frappuccinos in the store and you're going to pay the tax. But if you go to a Starbucks and they prepare it for you, it will not be taxed. So the sort of on-demand custom sweetened beverages that a barista is making for you won't be taxed. However, if you buy the ready-to-drink version in your Walgreens or wherever, you will pay a tax.
Well, and your colleague Eric Zorn, a columnist at the Chicago Tribune, has pointed out that if you get a 20-ounce soda with ice at a McDonald's, say, you're paying 20 extra cents, even though maybe 7 or 8 of those ounces are iced water, right?
Well, I think that's certainly his argument. I think the county would say that it's a 20-ounce beverage. They're charging, therefore going to charge 20 cents, and it's up to the customer whether or not they want to add ice to it. So,
on a line, is Cicero, is that the line one? Cicero, this is John. You're on WGM. What was your question or comment?
Hi, John. Thank you very much. Is the little Kool-Aid packages, are those going to be taxed? Or do we have to add sugar at home?
If it's a powder that you buy at the store, like the Kool-Aid or Gatorade or Crystal Light, and you mix it at home, it's not taxed. That's not subject to the tax.
Okay, thanks for the call. Does the logic generally, is it consistent? That is, if at the end of the day, nobody wants to pay more money, but the county needs it, and they say we'll justify it by saying we're making decisions that are healthier for everybody. Is it consistent that way, that the things that are being taxed are not healthy, and the things that are healthy are not being taxed? I hope my question made sense there. So unhealthy things are being taxed, these sweetened beverages. And the LaCroix, which are a healthy choice, are not being taxed. Mm-hmm. Does it pretty much go down that path?
Well, I think that's certainly subject for debate. There are certainly beverages. Some people would say that diet sodas are, not bad for you, or the stevia. A lot of the kind of the natural marketed beverages are flavored with stevia. The jury's still out, I think, on health impact there. And so, you know, I think the bottom line is the county needs this money and believes it will also have over time an impact on public health.
Yeah.
But that's certainly, you know, a topic for debate that, you know, you can argue, you know, across this topic on that one.
Yeah, no kidding. Do we have any idea on how many jobs this is going to cost, or will it be neutral on that?
Well, it, because of the delay in court, you know, the county said a couple weeks ago that it, as part of the plan to offset the revenue, that it would have to lay off 300 people that as part of the plan to offset the lost revenue. Now, since the court has allowed this tax to continue, it's not clear at this point how many of those 300 people will actually end up being laid off. And the county has basically said, once the money starts rolling in from the tax, we'll evaluate the financial picture as it goes.
Okay. Well, I wonder if people are stocking up. Any reports of people pulling up with minivans to Costco and getting all the soda they can?
I certainly have heard reports of that. I have not seen it myself, so I'm curious how it's going to go down tomorrow, but we'll have some reporters out there talking to people.
Well, but tomorrow you're paying the higher freight, right?
That's right.
Today is the last day.
Yeah.
In fact, Greg Trotter, business reporter, Chicago Tribune, thanks for coming in today.
All right. Thank you.
Really interesting stuff. You hear him with Amy Guth on Saturdays as well. Ro and Anna are just getting into the studio because they were at Costco loading up on grape knee highs and beverages like that to try and avoid the extra penny for the ounce for the sweetened sodas.
I'm actually just buying pounds and pounds and pounds of sugar and just pouring it into and just brown liquid, like whatever that liquid color stuff is.
Molasses.
Yeah.
You can make your
syrup.
Own.
Syrup.
Yeah. Sure, why
I'm
not?
I'm going to make my own. I'm going to go back. I'm going to do it, the original Dr. Pepper. Was there really a Dr. Pepper? I don't know.
This guy would know. Was there originally a Dr. Pepper?
I cannot confirm that.
All right.
Okay. But there's no, so there is no tax on just sugar. You could get your own and make your own drinks,
you
right?
You certainly could, yes.
All right. Yeah. Good job, bro. There you go.
Yeah. That's what we're
great
do.
Answer.
Yeah.
What about a milkshake? Would a milkshake at McDonald's get in? That's a sweet beverage, right?
It's not counted. According to the county commissioner who was here, he said that's not counted.
Why wouldn't a milkshake be counted? That's probably the worst
made,
thing.
Because technically it's made there.
Oh, it's prepared there.
It's prepared there. Yeah.
That's right.
And LaCroix is excluded, too. That was one that
LaCroix
I was...
LaCroix is excluded.
That's the only reason this man is here to promise me that my LaCroix
is... I saw it in the Tribune. I understand it was very comforting to feel
okay,
that way.
Okay, but just to thumb my nose at this whole thing, I'm going to have a milkshake tomorrow.
Why is LaCroix excluded, though?
It's no sugar. It's sweetened with natural flavors.
That's right. Just natural flavors. So there are some sparkling waters that are sweetened, some that are not. And they're side by side in the store, so you actually have to pick it up and look at the ingredients to make sure.
But think about that. The flavor is sweet. It's a sweet beverage. You're never going to convince me that that is not a sweet beverage.
Totally thought it was
included.
Water
doesn't taste like that. This stuff is sweeter. It's sweet.
I would like everyone arrested for this.
I do too. This is horrible.
I want everybody going to jail.
I think you got your own line of beverages there. You can get at Whole Foods, charge like $4 a pop. Row,
But think about this,
drink.
Ro, if we didn't get this, you might back me up on this. They'd find something else to tax. I mean, you don't have to buy soda pop if you don't want, so don't buy it and avoid the tax. Mm-hmm. Let the other people pay.
You know what I said? When you put Tony Preckwinkle in the back of the paddy wagon, don't be too nice.
By the way, that was his Donald Trump.
I picked up on that.
You
didn't
know. Yeah. Don't cover her head. Don't just bam it. Just jam it on the...
Wait, don't put your hand there. I can't reach it. I'm not tall enough.
By the way,
this is so stupid. We're going to talk about this as well.
I
hope so. I need to just mention this. My producer, Elif, shoots a video with your guys every day. Is that right? Or once in a while? Afternoons with Elif.
Yes.
So while you see her in my videos that we've been posting on our brackets, a video taken during Crosstalk that we're doing with Rowan Ina, in which Brian gets a daily slice of Elif's life, has just been posted.
Oh,
so
terrific.
Right. There we go.
You can check that out. And you guys have a really good show today.
Thank you
very much.